Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18+, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
This is a Game Day podcast from TalkSport.
Hello and welcome to the Game Day podcast from TalkSport as we look forward to a full midweek of Premier League games in the company of the former Manchester City winger Trevor Sinclair and TalkSport's Alex Crook. But first, penalty schmenalty.
So it's Ronaldo against Kroll. 74 on the clock. A penalty for Manchester United at the River End. Kroll is going through his repertoire of antics on the touchline. He arcs his run up, steps up, slams it into the corner and sends Kroll the wrong way and sends Manchester United into the lead. And Cristiano Ronaldo is a goal scorer again.
A weekend where five games have been decided by penalties. What does that tell us? The most of those matches were really tight. Tighter, in fact, than Adama Traore's jersey. Ralph Rangnick continues his unbeaten streak, but will they even play Brentford? Leicester bounce back from European disappointment, but will they even play Tottenham? And Raheem Sterling scores a landmark goal. We will hear from him.
Yeah, it's a nice achievement to win. The most important today was a difficult game, man, to get through. I'm just happy to be able to help the team.
Chelsea's comeback, West Ham's goal-scoring woes, and Conor Gallagher is the boy. We will try to look at all the midweek action with every game available via the TalkSport app. It really is the best way to follow the Premier League, and like James Maddison, you can dive right in. It's the Game Day podcast from TalkSport.
This is Game Day.
Hello to Trevor Sinclair and Alex Crook. Trevor, I mean, what I was going to say, what was the highlight of your week? But obviously it's seeing Alex Crook's shirt. I mean, can we describe it quickly before we go any further?
The only word I would use is rascal.
That's fine. I like that. I'm happy with that.
So sorry, could you just explain to us what is actually on that horrible shirt that you're wearing?
I think they're moose wearing Christmas hats.
So you're dressed like the moose?
Now, let's not be too silly about it. Listen, Adrian Durham has been wearing this type of stuff on Drive for years.
And he looked awful as well. Yeah. Could you just stand up so we can have a look? Can we just have a little look? So we just step out. So what is it, like reindeers on that? We want to see your face as well, please. Reindeers with the Santa hat on. I mean, that is literally the worst shirt I've ever seen in my life. But anyway, okay, nice to see you. What was the highlight of your weekend apart from Crook's shirt, Trevor?
The highlight of my weekend wasn't the game, actually. I was at the Etihad. It was a really scrappy game. Manchester City got the 3 points by, some would call a dubious penalty, but yeah, it wasn't a great spectacle. And I think a lot of that was caused by the officiating by John Moss, unfortunately.
By some, do you mean everybody that isn't a Manchester City supporter?
Well, I think you look at the top three or four teams in the league and they all had dubious penalties over this weekend. So I'm sure we'll get into that, especially the Chelsea one.
Well, I actually don't think that anybody else had a more dubious penalty than that amongst the top clubs. I think the Leicester one is worst, obviously. But the handball is farcical, isn't it? It hits him on the body. I mean, his arm is in the air, yes, but it then goes on to his arm from that. I mean, I've gone through the laws of the game and I do think that the PGMOL will make a case for it being the correct decision because it says in one of the laws that if your arm is in a position like this with it up in the air, you run the risk of the ball hitting your arm, therefore giving away a free kick or penalty.
And I think when you talk about penalties and the silhouette of the body, so if your arms are by your side, and there was one earlier in the game against the Wolves player,
Max Kilman.
We spoke about it, and I thought, yeah, he can't actually move his arms. They were right close to his thighs, and I thought, correct decision. I don't think VAR looked at it, and I thought that was the correct decision. On this occasion, the arm was well raised above the head, and even if it did, maybe, because I don't think we can all be certain, touch the armpit before it touched the arm, the arm was always going to cover the ball and the ball was never going to find
Sorry, Trevor,
through.
Trevor, could you, I mean, it's actually visible on the screen. Could you take your blue tinted glasses off for a second?
If Raheem Sterling had have sniffed the ball before he took the penalty, he would have been able to smell whatever deodorant the Wolves player was wearing. That's how much it hit the armpit.
Yeah, it was. I mean, that was a ridiculous penalty. Come on, let's just admit it. I don't like the Maddison one either. I thought that was absolutely ridiculous. I thought Ings had a bit of a case when Alisson seemed to collide into him, but I know he put his hand on the ball, but he also took him with his legs at the same time as well. Look, you know, I think there were two... many games decided by penalties. I think soft penalties were supposed to be eradicated this season, and the Maddison one falls into that category. I don't understand how the VAR has not overturned it. I don't understand how the VAR has not overturned the João Moutinho handball. But I actually think the game evened itself up at the Etihad Stadium, because I do think the Kilman one, he leans into the ball. So that could have been a penalty. Anyway, Sunday finished with more positive COVID tests. How much peril is the midweek football in, Crook?
Well, I think you have to say that United's trip to Brentford, that you're due to be commentating live on TalkSport on Tuesday, is under threat. The fact that United have already notified the Premier League of these positive COVID tests suggests that maybe they're laying the foundations for some kind of postponement. My understanding is that all of the United travelling party that made their way to Carrow Road took lateral flow tests before boarding the coach. They were all negative. And then they were tested again after the game, and there were some positive tests. Those players kept away from the training ground on Sunday. And listen, we probably shouldn't speculate, but you do wonder if there is a correlation here, because Tottenham had to call off their last game because of positive COVID tests. They were playing Norwich not that long ago. Norwich then had a COVID outbreak that affected their team selection for the weekend. And then they've just played Manchester United, and suddenly they've got COVID positive tests as well. So it's not a great situation. Then we hear about Aston Villa closing their training ground, with only one player so far has tested positively. So hopefully their game will be able to go ahead. And Tottenham are confident that their situation is easing now, and that their match on Thursday against Leicester should, at this stage, go ahead as scheduled.
Okay, so we might get at least 90% of the games played this week, which is good because we've got a huge midweek schedule. But first, let's have a look at some of the stories of the weekend.
Here's McTominay, forward onto Ronaldo inside the area, going a little bit wide, chops back in on his right foot, then goes on his left, then strikes towards the far corner, saved by Krul, pushed away. And out towards the near side. Sancho picks it up, tries to get to the byline, does get to the byline, produced across, into the near post, stabbed away by Kabak. Telles whips it in towards the near post. It's headed away by Sargent, comes back out as far as Dalot, clips it back down the left towards Fernandez. Great header across the face of goal, tucked away by Sorensen again. Sancho back into the area looking for Maguire, who flicks a header goalwards! And it's tipped over the top by the backpack pedalling Krul, who just about fingered it over the top of the crossbar after a really good header. Stooping on the penalty spot was Harry Maguire. The cross that came in was brilliant from Sancho. A little flicked header which seemed to be looping over Krul before he tipped it out for a corner. Here is Pukki on the edge of the area, trying to turn, does turn, gets the shot away, hits the top of the crossbar. There was a little touch by De Gea to help it onto the woodwork, but from 18 yards Pukki spun, turned, whacked it left-footed, sent it right down the throat of the goalkeeper, who sprawled up to his left and tipped it onto the crossbar. There might be a penalty here because there was a tuck back on Ronaldo. There was. It's going to be a penalty to Manchester United.
Yep.
Ronaldo's had to wait a very long time. Krul is going through his repertoire of antics on the touchline. He arcs his run up, steps up, slams it into the corner and sends Krul the wrong way and sends Manchester United into the lead. Oh, what a chance that was. What a brilliant save from De Gea, who's rescued Manchester United for a second time in this game.
Manchester United won away at Norwich thanks to a penalty from Ronaldo 15 minutes from time, 11 changes, and despite the rest and having extra time to prepare, Manchester United looked a little bit sluggish and didn't really threaten a side who have conceded more goals than any other in the Premier League this season, and they got a little bit lucky and relied on David De Gea to keep them in it. Trevor Sinclair.
Yeah, David De Gea, I think this season, in general, apart from a couple of mistakes, he's been outstanding. One of the mistakes possibly could be the Bernardo goal when they were at home against Manchester City, but in general, I think his displays of been superb, and it reflects what his attitude has been this year. He went in early for pre-season training. He knew that there was a risk to his number one jersey at Manchester United. He came in early, worked his socks off, and he's got the rewards, found his form. Unfortunately for Manchester United, he has, because he was excellent. He made a couple of really key saves in that game. And I think it's been said before, but I think if it was anyone other than Norwich, or certainly a top 10 side, Manchester United could have found themselves on the losing side.
Yeah, they lacked a little bit of physicality. Ralf Rangnick bemoaned the body language. I was particularly disappointed with Marcus Rashford. I thought his final ball choice was poor again, Alex.
I think he needs to be taken out of the team. I think his form for a long time now has been questionable. And he looks like a player who doesn't enjoy his football. He looks like a player who doesn't have the confidence that he had when he first burst onto the scene. He's not doing anything on a whim now. And I think he's overthinking it. You know, there's no kind of spontaneity in his game. And I think Mason Greenwood, if this game against Brentford goes ahead, should get the nod. But he's not the only one. Bruno Fernandes, after what we thought was a mini upturn, scoring a big goal in the Champions League, he too is struggling. And actually, I was listening to your commentary, Sam, and I thought Alvin Martin hit the nail on the head. It's easy if you're a defender and you're trying to rebuild confidence because you just keep the game simple. Even as a centre forward, you just hope that a chance comes your way from 6 yards and you put it in the back of the net. If you're Bruno Fernandes, a maverick, a playmaker, someone who's expected to carry the team, it isn't that easy because you keep having to try to make things happen, but he just doesn't seem capable of it at this moment in time.
Tricky trip on Tuesday as well, isn't it? We think they're going to take on Brentford, who came back from a one-goal deficit on Friday night against Watford. Not an easy team to put to bed, Trevor Sinclair.
No, I was impressed, especially without Canos and their talisman, Ivan Toney, missing. I expected Watford to possibly win that game. And I was surprised and pleased that the Brentford side came through it and shown really good resilience coming back from a goal down. I thought that was excellent team spirit, and the manager will be very pleased with that. The sooner they can get Toney back, the better.
They don't need him to take penalties though, do they? Because Bojan Mbeumo was particularly cool and calm, I thought, right at the very end of that game.
Because the amount of chances that I've seen him miss this season. And listen, that's what forwards do, and he keeps on putting himself in the position. So you have to give him credit for that. But he's not been clinical enough, and especially with some of the chances that I've seen him miss. Mm. But from the spot, kudos, he did very well. And they're going to get stronger. I think that'll give them a lot of confidence for the squad, you know, missing a couple of their really key players and still being able to come back from a goal deficit and winning that game. And that'll be excellent for team spirit and belief.
Norwich improving. They welcome Aston Villa on Tuesday. You can see they are more organised, can't you? They had serious injury and COVID problems in that game at the weekend. In fact, all three of their first choice central defenders were out of the team after 15 minutes because Grant Hanley picked up a bad injury. They responded brilliantly to it. Dean Smith underscoring, I think, Crook, that he's a good manager.
Yeah, and I think Billy Gilmore underscoring why he should have been in the team right from the start of the season, because he had a real impact in that game. Again, listening to your commentary and watching the highlights, most of Norwich's attacks seem to stem from him. But defensively, it is a concern with Grant Hanley hobbling off. And you look at the firepower that Aston Villa have at their disposal, they should have enough to make it a good night for Steven Gerrard and a bad one for Dean Smith, in what we can probably call the Dean Smith derby now. And it's quite an unusual situation for him, having been sacked by his boyhood club, to come up against them so quickly. He'll be keen to prove a point, I think, but they just don't have the quality going forward, do they, Norwich? You talk about David De Gea, one or two of those chances, he shouldn't really have had the opportunity to save. That lack of cutting edge, the fact they've got so many defenders injured, I think it's difficult to make a case for Norwich winning this game.
And also, talking about Billy Gilmore, his creativity in that side, he also had a little word with Cristiano Ronaldo in the game and said, get on the weights. Which I thought was quite amusing. He's a tough jock.
We all stood in the rain for about half an hour after the game, getting soaked, wet through. So much so that I actually missed my dinner date with Guy Mowbray because I couldn't bring myself to leave the hotel after getting absolutely sopping wet doing the interviews afterwards. I did. I felt really bad about it as well. I texted my son, I'm sorry, but I just can't go out now. I'm just absolutely wet. You know, I'm ridiculous. It was pathetic on my behalf, and I'm sorry, Guy. But the other thing was, is that, you know, Dean Smith was there, big, great big jacket, like me. You know, he was dressed as a Sith Lord when he was doing his Match of the Day interview. And then Billy Gilmore was just standing there in his kit.
And Chelsea are looking more defensively suspect than at any time under Thomas Tuchel. Daniel James looking to make room for a shot. Drifting out to the right-hand side, goes down under pressure from Marcos Alonso. He's given a penalty. Chris Kavanagh has given a penalty for a challenge on Daniel James by Marcos Alonso. Up steps Rafinha then, left-footed against Mendy. Little delay, and it's down the middle. And Leeds United hit the front at Stamford Bridge. And once again, they failed to keep a clean sheet. Thomas Tuchel's defensive problems continue. Chelsea have won it back down the left-hand side. Marcos Alonso to the byline, into the near post, and touched so beautifully by Mason Mount for 1-1. Comes out to Marcos Alonso, flicks it down the left-hand side of the box. This space for Rudiger, who's taken down by Rafinha, a corner given. The Chelsea fans at the Matthew Hollingshead howling for a penalty kick. Whistle the VAR screen, it's a penalty! Referee blows his whistle, up steps the Italian, stutter, and a goal into the top corner! Emphatic penalty from Jorginho, and Chelsea have turned it around! Good football down the left-hand side from Leeds, click again, plays in the overlap, oh it's in! Joe Gelhardt! His first Premier League goal! Lukaku won't get hold of the ball. A penalty! Rudiger brought down at the edge of the area, and another penalty goes Chelsea's way. Jorginho scores! Sends Melier the wrong way! Chelsea have surely won it right at the death!
Chelsea 3-2 winners against Leeds in arguably the best game of the weekend. Three penalties, all of them correctly given, I think. And Leeds certainly back to their best in terms of fitness, energy and work rate. And tested a Chelsea side who relied on some Mason Mount brilliance and a bit of fight from Rudiger to get over the line, Trevor.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I thought it was a great game. I agree with you. I think it was the best game, most entertaining game of the weekend. It does churn me a little bit looking at the pattern of play and the passage of play which led to the penalty. I don't think that's a penalty. I think that's a really soft penalty.
Well, there's three penalties, so you need to identify which penalty you're talking about.
The last one, okay, Rudiger's right. Penalty. I just thought he bought that. I thought the referees were, you know, going into the season trying to get rid of that and stamp it out. And
I still can't believe you're complaining about that penalty and saying that the Joao Moutinho one is okay.
Well, I thought it was handball. I thought his hand was raised above his arm, and I thought it hit his arm. But going back to the really good one, I thought he, I think he's Marmite. You either love him or hate him. He's a disruptor. He's a leveller. He puts himself about. He uses his physicality. But you can't have both. I don't think you can be that kind of player and then go down so softly for a penalty. The referee fell for it. It was a good penalty, as we'd expect, by the main man who's almost made that penalty take in style his own. I thought it was an excellent penalty by Jorginho in a really difficult position with full of pressure, and he just dispatched it like you wouldn't believe against, you know, a decent goalkeeper. So I think Chelsea got over the line, did well, but they are still not back to where they were at the beginning of the season, where they were brushing every team aside.
I think that left-back area is still a problem.
Major issue.
Alonso, relying on him for the rest of the season when the going gets tough and you're in the later stage of the Champions League and you're competing for titles, I'm not convinced by that. They'll be okay this week. They've got Everton at home. We'll probably talk about Everton and their shambolic performance at Crystal Palace later, so that they'll win there. And then there's still the reintegration of Romelu Lukaku into the team. We were speaking to Jason Cundy on Darren Bent's Boot Room on Sunday night, and he says to him he still doesn't look fit at the moment. He thinks Kai Havertz offers more in that false number nine position than Lukaku does. That's a £93 million problem that Thomas Tuchel needs to solve.
Well, he's solving it with a £72 million problem. So, I mean, it's not too difficult, really, is it? I mean, you know, it's great to be able to rely on Kai Havertz if Romelu Lukaku isn't firing on all cylinders. Okay, Rudiger's an interesting one. I know you said he divides opinion. I mean, he divides opinion amongst even Chelsea fans. I mean, because if you look at the two sides of his game, sometimes he can be brilliant defensively, and he was during this match, but he was also brilliant in the opposition penalty area, winning two penalties. But he also vacated the Chelsea penalty area to go on a 20-30-yard drive with the ball, which sometimes really works in their favour, then forgot about the fact that he needed to get back, and that's how they scored their equalising goal right at the end of the game anyway. So, you know, He does divide opinion amongst everybody.
There's too much drama. There's so much going on.
And yeah, also, he just charges out of defence. And when, as soon as that scrap happened and he was like 60 yards away, he thought, I've got to get in the middle of this and show just how important I am to my friends. I need to make sure I am the alpha male here and go and pick on someone. Quickly, do it.
What made me laugh about that? I mean, it was a bit of a throwback to Lee's Chelsea games in the 60s and 70s. I think it was Rafinha who exited the scene very quickly. It was just casually strolling down the touchline while the rest of the outfield players were scrapping by the corner flag.
Off you go, lads. You get on with that. I'd be straight down it. I'd be in the shower. Right, okay. Wolves 0, Manchester City 1 with Raheem Sterling's 100th Premier League goal. Woo! And here is Raheem Sterling speaking exclusively to Nigel Adderley.
100 Premier League goals. What an achievement for you.
Yeah, it's... nice achievement to win. The most important today was a difficult game, man, to get through. I'm just happy to be able to help the team.
And they made it hard for you?
Yeah, as I said, Wolves are always a team that we find, you know, really difficult to break down. They're really compact and, you know, we found it really difficult again today.
And you're back in the side now. You have been recently and you seem to be rediscovering that verve that you've always shown.
Yeah, as I said, I'm a player. You know, I like to feel a part of it, like to, you know, feel... you know, I can help my team and, you know, I'm really grateful to have a run in the side so I can, you know, can do just that.
And with the players around the squad, you have to be on top form every time, don't you?
Yeah, as I said, we've got two players in each position, two top players in every position that plays for their national team. So it's loads of challenges, yeah.
And you've got a game here on Tuesday. It's relentless at the moment.
Yeah, the Christmas period is always a tough one, but it's one we know that we have to, you know, be focused and look forward to the next.
Brilliant, and good luck to Raheem Sterling as well. We're delighted with the fact that he's got his 100th Premier League goal. Leeds beat Manchester City last season at the Etihad, Trevor, and got over a sending off to achieve it. They've got to get over a few injury issues to achieve it this time around. Can they do it on Tuesday night?
I think they can. I think
Leeds can beat Man City.
Steady.
That's what we just asked you, and you said they can.
Excuse me. No, listen, Manchester City, even though it was a close game.
We got excited there for a moment.
Against Wolves. I think a lot of the problems that flowed from that game was from the referee, John Moss. He let so many fouls go in the opening 15, 20, 25 minutes of the game that eventually he had to book Rodri for a drag back. And then from there on in, he was a bit card happy.
Yeah.
And that was... just the way that he officiated the game, it ended up being a really bad tempered game.
Well, was he also the problem on Wednesday night when they lost to RB Leipzig?
No, I think RB, it was a dead rubber, and it's very difficult to raise your game for them kind of games, and especially with the rotation of squad and the way that I thought RB Leipzig showed great character, you know, managerless, went into the game, them against the world, and they pulled off a great result. I think Manchester City started that game really sloppily. This game, they started the game well. But I think John Moss, with the way that he officiated the game, it encouraged a little bit of bad temper between the two sides. It got very etchy. And that culminated in Raul Jimenez absolutely losing his head and putting his teammates in a really bad situation and going down to 10 men with a ridiculous decision to stay on the ball after he'd been yellow carded and then get a subsequent second yellow card and get sent off. And that kind of... was the final nail in the coffin for Wolves. And Manchester City started the second half superbly well. I was really pleased for Raheem getting his 100th goal in, 303 games. Excellent record for a winger. And, you know, since he's been brought back into the side, I think he's been one of the bright sparks and he looks like he's really found his form again.
One of my favourite videos of the weekend was Wayne Rooney, from a few years ago now. It must have been before a Manchester derby. But he is... kicking a ball to a toddler wearing a Manchester City strip, and the caption was Manchester City's players trying to get Jack Grealish to score a goal, because that is an issue, isn't it? The return of a £100 million investment, for me, Jack Grealish is yet to live up to the price tag. And again, like Thomas Tuchel, it's something that Pep Guardiola is going to have to find a solution for. And like Thomas Tuchel, he's got plenty of alternative options, but that for me is a move that hasn't worked out to this point. Will Leeds repeat last season's success? You have to say it's unlikely, but I think Marcelo Bielsa will take a lot from defeat. They showed that character, they showed that physicality and that fitness that we became accustomed to seeing from Leeds last season. if they can go here and come away with a respectable scoreline and not get hammered, that should set them in good stead for the rest of the campaign when some of their key players are back to fitness.
Chelsea take on Everton at 7:45 on Thursday night. Rafa Benitez goes back to Chelsea with the Toffees after being dismantled by Crystal Palace. There were chants of fat Spanish waiter after Richarlison was taken off, followed by the Brazilian's own song. I'm guessing that is Everton fans' way of saying, Crook, that they aren't very fond of Rafa Benitez. Would that be accurate?
Well, they've only won one game since middle of September, and that was against Arsenal. And you do wonder, if they didn't complete that comeback win against Arsenal, would Rafa Benitez be out of a job? Because for all the improvement that we saw in the second half on Monday night, it was back to being shambolic on Sunday. And obviously they got the goal back from Salem and Rondon, but it seemed a strange substitution when you're 1-0 down to take off Richarlison and bring on Rondon, who you know is not very popular with the fans and doesn't have a fantastic goal record in the Premier League, to say the least. It's just a bizarre change that Rafa made. He'll say, well, he got his goals, so it worked out in some ways. But ultimately, you look at the goal they conceded at the end. Seamus Coleman, I don't know what he's doing down by the corner flag. It was a wonderful finish in the end from Conor Gallagher. But that's a really bad defeat for Everton, and it doesn't get any easier, does it, for them? And it won't get any easier for Rafa Benitez. We knew right at the start of the season it wouldn't take much for the Evertonian faithful to turn on the former Liverpool manager, and I think he's got a massive job on his hands now to try and turn that situation around. Not sure Stamford Bridge on Thursday is the best place to do it.
Trevor, with Rafa Benitez, I mean, he's on a hiding to nothing, isn't he? He would have known that. And we said at the time, he's got, you know, skin thicker than a rhino. He doesn't care. He knows that he thinks he can diplomatically work his way out of any situation. Eventually, if you just stick with him long enough, he'll turn it around. But are they going to stick with him? Because I know that Farhad Moshiri has sort of indicated that he's going to, and he's going to put all his eggs in the Benitez basket. He's sacked Marcel Brands. So, I mean, there isn't really any other option of where to go after this. But sometimes it can just become too toxic, can't it?
Well, you say he's going to get his way out of it. I think he'll coach his way out of it. He's proved many times throughout his career that he's a great coach. He can get the best out of a group of players. I think the problems with Brand and the recruitment at Everton are highlighted. Mm. The depth of the squad, the quality in the squad, the lack of squad, I think is probably the more needed word. For me, they are a club that's massively in transition. It's been going through transition for far too long. I'm not just talking about Brand. I'm not just talking about Rafa. I'm talking for years upon years upon years. And unless they get some kind of blueprint in place and protocol in place in which way they want to run the club, coach from the top to the bottom, recruit a certain style of player for different positions, I think they're always going to be just bobbing around middle of the table. I think it's a huge thing that clubs need now. They need a real blueprint of how they want to play. And you look at the top clubs, you know, they've all got their own different philosophies, but they've got a philosophy. And I think that's probably one of the biggest bonuses with Ralph going in at Manchester United. He will bring a philosophy to that club, and that club will stick to that. I think when Pep Guardiola leaves Manchester City will continue to operate in the philosophy which Pep has made for that football club. I think Everton are lacking that DNA at the moment, and we don't really know what kind of team they want to be.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
Raheem Sterling up against Jose Sarr.
Sterling steps up, right footed, calmly done, down the middle. A century of Premier League goals for Raheem Sterling and Mo Salah, who in the week became the first Liverpool player since Ian Rush to score 20 goals in five successive seasons, has done it again.
And here it's game over. Arsenal 3, Southampton 0. Terrible goalkeeping from Willy Caballero. A corner that was whipped in at pace. He got absolutely nowhere near it and he was beaten to it by Gabriel. Jorginho scores! Sends Melier the wrong way. Chelsea have surely won it right at the death to keep pace at the top.
Ronaldo's had to wait a very long time. Kroll is going through his repertoire of antics on the touchline. He arcs his run up, steps up, slams it into the corner and sends Kroll the wrong way and sends Manchester United into the lead.
Leicester going goal crazy. They lead Newcastle by 4-0. James Maddison has had a hand in pretty much all the goals today and he's finally got his name on the score sheet.
Hope was exceptional in the second half, making several excellent saves. Burnley rallied near the end, but they couldn't find the target. So it finished, Burnley 0. West Ham United now.
Bristol Palace 3, Everton 1. This boy is a special player and he's just scored a sensational goal to surely give Crystal Palace all 3 points.
Burnley 0, West Ham 0 and Arsenal 3, Southampton 0 were the weekend scorelines. They clash on Wednesday night. I mean, you just can't pick Arsenal, can you, at the moment? You know, the good news is that one goal in 12 for Mikel Antonio now, and ultimately if he isn't scoring, then West Ham don't. So that's probably good news for Arsenal in a sense. He's been involved in 40% of their goals this season in some way, shape or form. I thought Arsenal's goal that they did score against Southampton playing out from the back was absolutely terrific. You know that Pep Guardiola has sent Arteta the aubergine emoji after watching that goal. Okay, you would have been in love with it. Yeah, tactic worked very well against Saints, but West Ham are not going to allow them to do that because those sort of inches that they just about got away with passing that ball around to build that goal for Lacazette, you know, West Ham will be on them like a rash crook.
It was a very Arsenal result and performance, really, because actually Aaron Ramsdale made a number of big saves in the game. So they're still a team who give the opposition plenty of opportunities to get shots on goal. But this is going to be Arsenal this season. They'll beat the teams they should be beating. They'll lose to the teams that you expect them to lose, the top four and Manchester United. And then they'll throw in the occasional wobbler like they did against Everton on Monday night. I'm still not sure we're seeing signs of a long-term rebuild under Mikel Arteta. The Aubameyang situation is very interesting because this isn't the first time that he's had disciplinary issues and that Mikel Arteta has had to leave out his captain. It'll be fascinating to see where they go from here because, quite frankly, nobody else is going to give Aubameyang the type of money that Arsenal are paying him, even if Arteta did want to try and get rid of him in January.
Oh, I've heard that story before somewhere, haven't I?
Exactly. So they certainly haven't learned that lesson. And the alternative to Aubameyang seems to be Alex Lacazette, who is letting his contract run down and he's going to leave on a free transfer in the summer anyway. So it's a big problem at the top end of the pitch. And I think they will have to be better. We're going to have to see the best of Arsenal if they are to overcome a West Ham side who've stopped scoring goals, but they're not conceding many at this moment in time either. And actually, you talk about penalties. I think given some of the spot kicks that we saw this weekend, David Moyes is right to be unhappy.
Absolutely.
That the foul on Dawson wasn't penalised.
Well, Dwight McNeil's given away a penalty 7 days out of eight, hasn't he? I mean, that is, there's no way that the VAR can have a look at that and not find clear and obvious evidence to turn it over. West Ham should have had a penalty in that game against Burnley, but didn't. I mean, with Arteta, I suppose it's hashtag trust the process, isn't it? Whereas with West Ham United, how did they find their goal-scoring mojo? Because Antonio now really has started to struggle.
Yeah, but I think when you listen to the faithful West Ham fan who's sensible, looks at it properly, assesses the situation, we've always known that they're a striker short and an out-and-out number nine short, especially with the way they play. It's an integral part of their game, the way they play out, the way they use it as a focal point, the way they mix it up a little bit and go directly into Antonio. He's doing a lot right. He's just looking a little bit leggy. I think, obviously, playing for Jamaica, the increased amount of games that he's having to play, the lack of rest, the Europa League, which they've been involved with, I think it's just affecting the squad. And like we always said, if they get two or three injuries, which they have, they're going to struggle to maintain the performances and the way they play. And I think that's actually what we're seeing at the moment.
I think they'll be dipping into the transfer market for a centre-half or two very early in January.
Although Diop and Dawson, I have to say, did very well.
Absolutely great, but you can't play those two for the rest of the season on their own. You know, Zouma's going to be out for a little while. Obviously, there's a problem for Ogbonna. So they need backup. They need someone to come in if they want to play a back three. Cresswell's been out for a while too. And Masuaku obviously is great at
better
some things
a wing back,
and not great at other things. So yeah, Burnley take on Watford at 7:30. The other team that were involved in the fixture with West Ham this weekend finished 0-0. You know, for Burnley, I don't really know what to make of Burnley. They've obviously lost Maxwell Cornet. That loses a massive goal threat. They keep throwing away leads when they have them, and then obviously when they are at home, it doesn't feel comfortable for them. They haven't had a great run there for a long time.
No, but this is a big chance for Burnley, because actually it's one win in seven now for Watford. That was against the Manchester United team that absolutely stunk out Vicarage Road. And from the accounts I've had from people that were at the Brentford Community Stadium, despite the fact they led for a long time, Watford were actually quite poor.
Oh, they were rubbish on Friday night. It was, yeah. The inexplicable decision that Ranieri made to make the change. I mean, it was just no one can understand why it was. I mean, you know, everyone was going, well, why has he done that? He's taken off a midfield player, brought on a forward, and he's left himself overrun in midfield. And then what happened.
The Tinker Man living up to his name. So yeah, this is a chance for Burnley, but goal scoring has been a problem for Sean Dyche for a long time now. Cornet seemed to solve that in the short term, but just say with him unavailable, they need their strikers to start finding the net again, and that hasn't happened for a while.
Yeah, just when you thought they'd turn the corner. Crystal Palace 3, Everton 1. A focus on the Crystal Palace side of the argument. Conor Gallagher has been involved in 9 of Crystal Palace's 22 Premier League goals this season. That is 41%. That is a crackers level of influence, Trevor Sinclair.
Well, he's a top player. He's a top prospect, and he's turning into a top player. Watched him in the under 21 game, and out of all the under 21s that we watched, I took my son to Turf Moor, and out of all the players, I'd say Cole Palmer had a few flashes, but the best player on the pitch by far for me, when you're talking about a player that had the potential to step up, was Conor Gallagher. Mm. His physicality, his energy, his simplicity. 100% reminds me of Frank Lampard, because he's got an eye for goal, and it doesn't surprise me that he scored 6 and assisted 3 this season in a bit inconsistent, but a team that are attractive on the eye, which is Crystal Palace. And I have no doubt that he wants to finish the season really well, or continue the season and finish it really well, and try and force his way into that Chelsea side, because I think he's got all the attributes to make a really good, effective Chelsea midfielder.
Well, this time next year, he could be a Chelsea and England midfielder. I mean, he's already made his England debut, so the future looks bright for him. As well as scoring the opening goal, no player on the pitch had more touches in the opposition's box, fired in more shots, had more shots on target, created more chances, or played more passes in the final third than Conor Gallagher in the first half of the game. In fact, the only time that Crystal Palace have ever beaten Everton in the Premier League was 1994, before this game on Sunday, and he wasn't even born then.
That makes us all feel very old, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Especially you two, I would imagine.
My son was born in 1994, so that makes me feel very old.
That shirt was produced in 1994 that Crookie's wearing. Crystal Palace against Southampton then. I suppose we have to start to worry about Southampton, Crook. I mean, my worries started in the summer with the midlife crisis gear, but it peaked with a half-time change of mind of the midlife crisis gear at the weekend. What on earth was Ralph Hasenhüttl doing? He turned up in sort of like looking as if he was going to a wedding, and then he came out dressed as an assassin in the second half.
Well, I think he just got very wet. Actually, he had a Sam Matterface Guy Mowbray type situation, but he was shrewd enough to take along a change of clothes, so he'd have been able to make his dinner date. But listen, it's a worry for Southampton. I know they didn't drop points from winning positions this weekend. They have dropped 71 from winning positions under Ralph Hasenhüttl. And I think his in-game management is now starting to be questioned by the Southampton supporters. The changes that he makes to try and alter the course of history. Willie Caballero brought in because they've got a 23-year-old goalkeeper who's been there, because they've got a 23-year-old goalkeeper who's been there a long time, that clearly they don't feel is up to the rigours of the Premier League.
Well, nor is Willie Caballero on the evidence of what we saw at the weekend.
he threw one in. He probably threw two in when you look at the offside goal. And actually, the header from Martin Ødegaard, who was so embarrassed to score a header, he went away tapping his forehead.
He's never done it before, he said. He's never scored a header before.
But he's never played Willy Caballero before, because I think the goalkeeper should have done better with that as well. So this is problems for Southampton. They've got injuries. They had suspensions at the weekend. There's no obvious sign of a cash investment in the team in January. If they stay up, I think it will be solely because there are three worse teams than them.
Yeah, and they can't pay him off, can they, Ralph Hasenhüttl? Well, that's one of the big problems, because he's on quite a lot of money, from what I understand.
He is, and there's quite a big release clause as well. If anybody else wanted to show an interest, which you have to say, based on the form since the start of last year, that would appear to be unlikely.
It's been a long time since he thought he was going to get the Chelsea job, isn't it?
Yeah, listen, it's not great, but until there's a change right at the top of the club in terms of new owners, Southampton fans are going to have to get used to this. The game plan seems to be to tread water and hope there are three worse teams than you. It's a dangerous tactic.
Good luck with that. Okay, talking about a team that are hoping there are three worse teams than them, Newcastle United got battered on Sunday. What a dreadful defensive display from Newcastle. 4-0 losers away at the King Power Stadium. I mean, never in a million years is it a penalty that starts things off. Never. I mean, it's unbelievable that not only the referee gave it, but once the referee's given it, the VAR, who is Paul Tierney, must look at that and think, that is a dive. Because James Maddison has basically gone into the standing foot of Jamal Lascelles, who's pulled his leg away, and Maddison has gone splashing into the penalty area. It's an outrageous decision, but it is not an excuse to lose 4-0. Unless they were slick, dynamic, they were on it on Sunday. Eddie Howe says that the scoreline was harsh. Trevor, I'm not sure it was.
No, neither am I. I thought they were really poor. They defended terribly. I thought, like you just mentioned there, I thought Leicester looked more like their usual self. Passed the ball well. Looked great on the counter attack, but controlled the game all in all. And I have to say, disappointing. James Maddison diving like he did. You know, I'm all for, you know, trying to bend the rules to gain an advantage, but that's pretty much cheating for me. You know, he's looked for the foot. He's gone over Lascelles' foot. And the worst thing is, you know, when it goes to VAR, that they've not asked the referee to go and have a look at the monitor because they feel he's made a mistake. I mean, I think that's the biggest atrocity that's gone on with the way that the penalty was given. I think it's shocking. And, you know, there's no accountability. Why are VAR not asking the referee to go and have a look at the monitor?
Because I don't understand.
Are they looking after each other?
I don't understand that.
It's ridiculous.
I mean, how can he not look at that and go, you know, I think it's not a penalty, but you better look at it again just to make sure, because, you know, I'm not 100% sure that it's a penalty. You better go and have a look at it. But they don't. And it's crazy. It is absolutely crazy, because there's no way. That does change the game, obviously. Of course it changes the game, because the opening goal in any game will change the trajectory of the match. But ultimately, this is a huge decision. Newcastle fighting for their lives. Crikey, you've got to get that right. And it's such a blatant error. I mean, look, there's nothing you can do about it now. The Foxes registered a clean sheet, though, for the first time in 17 matches in all competitions, despite losing Johnny Evans to an early injury. So that is good news for Brendan Rodgers. Liverpool next for Newcastle. Jurgen Klopp happy with another Liverpool win. They bossed the game, didn't they, on Saturday?
Yeah, they did. And there were all kinds of penalty shouts in that game. Steven Gerrard obviously unhappy with a penalty given against them, which I think was probably a spot kick. And I'm 50-50 on the one with Danny Ings. So if I'm 50-50, therefore it isn't a clear and obvious error. So you have to say that VAR probably right not to intervene. But Liverpool were the dominant force, could have scored more goals. They'll beat Newcastle. I mean, you mentioned there that Eddie Howe will point to a game-changing decision. But they didn't have a shot on target, Newcastle, in the first half against a Leicester defence. To use your analogy, who couldn't defend a sandcastle. They lost Johnny Evans. This was a massive chance for Newcastle, one that they failed to take. And the way they capitulated, it is a massive worry. I don't think they'll get a point now, at least for the rest of this year, until they go into January. And then,
well, they've got easy fixtures next. They've got Liverpool, Manchester United and Manchester City. I mean, that's a breeze, isn't it?
It's a nightmare. It's a terrible result for morale, for the confidence of the fans, and probably for the confidence of the board when it comes to opening the checkbook as well.
But did they take a selfie afterwards? No. Okay, I think that's a no. And listen, defensively, Villa stuck at it in the game against Liverpool. And we're, you know, we're talking about Liverpool playing Newcastle at 8 o'clock on Thursday. Newcastle aren't as capable defensively as Villa are, which would be a massive worry for Eddie Howe, because they've conceded 34 Premier League goals this season, more than any other side. It's their highest tally of goals conceded after the first 16 matches of any league campaign since 1977-78, when they went on to be relegated, Trevor. You must have remembered that
one. Yeah, but I think when you look at that Newcastle side, you know that they've got a threat going forward. I think midfield-wise, they could add to that area, but defensively, I think that's their weakest point. So I think if the checkbook is going to come out in January, which we don't know if that's going to be too late with the points that they're going to be adrift by that stage, they have to invest in the defenders, because for me, it's not been good enough. Conceding too many goals and, not great.
Look, we don't know whether they're going to be adrift or not at any stage, but we look at the table now and we think, actually, you know, the way that things are, actually, it's still quite concertinaed. So they're not adrift, are they? No one is. It's still up for grabs because Southampton and Watford are so bad.
Leeds, with their injury problems, you have to say they're still in it. Everton in free fall, but you'd imagine that Rafa will sort that out. So you're looking at Leeds, Southampton, Watford, Burnley, Newcastle and Norwich. I thought all along that Norwich would go. I think it's difficult for Newcastle, depending on what happens in January. And I think it will probably be Watford, would be my three at this stage.
Okay, all right. What about Leicester, Tottenham, 8 o'clock on Thursday? We know now that that game will probably go ahead. I mean, listen, Tottenham obviously have had some disruptions to training, and Leicester are now sort of in the funk of winning a game. They've kept a clean sheet. Tottenham don't really score that many goals anyway. Could Leicester come away with all the points here, Crookie?
Again, I think the result was more about Newcastle than about Leicester. Johnny Evans looks like he'll be out at least for this game and probably for a couple of weeks. So the injury situation doesn't get any easier. I think the form of Maddison will be encouraging. Youri Tielemans back fit and back amongst the goals as well. You'd imagine Vardy will come back in. They seem to be rotating him now during this busy period. But Tottenham, despite their COVID issues, have basically had a decent gap between games now. So Antonio Conte has had time to get them back in the training ground on Sunday and get them well drilled and well organised. I think it's a difficult game to call. I guess we'll know more about how much of a corner Leicester have turned come the close of play on Thursday.
I don't understand that. How has he had them all back in the training ground if they only had 12 players available on Thursday? I mean, the isolation period is 10 days, isn't it?
Well, they did return to the training ground on Sunday with the players that he had available. I guess he's been sanitised and shown to be a clean and safe environment. They would have been COVID tested as well.
But those players who tested positive cannot be involved in this game on Thursday, right? There's no way that can happen.
Well, we still don't know the identity of these 13 players, do we? So it will be an interesting team sheet when Antonio Conte submits it.
And also, you have to ask, when did the players show a positive test? So we don't know when that was. So they may be coming out of quarantine. And Tottenham won the last three league games. They're confident. And I would expect Tottenham to put up a really good showing. And especially with the work that Antonio's been doing with them and go there to win.
Did you hear that, by the way, in the background? Crook just went, "I've got to go," and then ran off. And like, it's as if we couldn't hear him if he spoke into the microphone whilst you were talking. I mean, he is a character, isn't he? He is doing Brighton against Wolves, because all of the matches this week are live on TalkSport and TalkSport 2 and via our app. And Brighton against Wolves is one of those. He'll be doing that game at 7:30 from the Amex Stadium with Paul Parker. Brighton are another team who haven't played this weekend, and they take on a Wolverhampton Wanderers side that are very binary, aren't they? I mean, every time you see a Wolverhampton Wanderers result, it's 0-0, 1-0, 1-0, 0-1, 1-0, 1-1. It doesn't get any more than that, or any less than that, does it?
No, they've conceded the least amount of goals outside the top three. Very, very disciplined, work hard. Neves and Moutinho in the middle of the park help them keep possession really well when they do win the ball back. And they've got a threat, you know, Raul Jimenez is back in the goals. You've always got pace with Traore. And they do pose a threat, but they are so well drilled. And with Connor Cody in the back line there, his communication skills, his leadership skills, they won't concede a lot of goals. I've been impressed with Aiton Nouri, played really well against Raheem Sterling at the weekend. I saw him when he first came into the side. He looked like a boy. He looks like he's developing and progressing really well. played like a man, took responsibility, and even was a bit of a threat going the other way against Manchester City. So, yeah, no, they're a well-drilled side. Bruno Lage has turned them into a bit of a nasty side. Little late tackles, no love lost between the team that they play against. And, yeah, that'll be a big test.
And what game are you at this week?
I am at the Chelsea-Everton game.
All right, okay, so that's on Thursday night, isn't it? And yes. That's
chance for Christmas shopping.
Oh, so you're going down to London, 7:30. Yeah, you can go into, there's a big Primark down there. You'll love it. It's great. I'm supposed to be doing horrible. Brentford versus Manchester United on Tuesday night, but I don't even know if I'm going to get to go to that now. And on Thursday, I'm doing Liverpool versus Newcastle. So it's always got sort of like iconic status, hasn't it? Because of the 4-3s back in the day, but there's absolutely zero chance of it being 4-3.
Unfortunately. In fact,
you've got no chance of Newcastle getting anywhere near like being one goal difference between them and Liverpool side, who seem to be in great spirits at the moment. Trevor and I are actually doing a charity run at the moment, where we're doing 5 kilometres a day, every single day in December. I don't know about you, but we are now on day, 12? But I am aching a lot. You know, my legs are hurting because it's accumulatively, it's quite a lot. You know, that's 60 kilometres we've done already. And I know that everybody else does it often and whatever. 5K is quite a lot for someone like me. I know you do it in about 15 blinks of an eye, but it takes half an hour out of my day every day. But I've been following your suggestions, by the way, strength and conditioning. I've been doing a bit of that. Keep myself going.
Yeah. Just to help that muscle mass, and so you don't pick up any little strains and muscle pulls and things like that.
Yeah, I do have noticed, though, my thighs are getting bigger.
Good.
I know, but I don't know if that's a good thing or not. They're getting massive. I can't. My jeans are really tight around my thighs. Loose around the waist, but you know, tight around the thighs. Not necessarily a good thing.
You'll have to go from skinny fit to standard jeans.
Apparently, that's in now. Right. Okay, Trevor. Thank you very much for joining us. Thanks to Crook as well. He's on a train now. That's it from us. We're back on Friday morning when we'll look back at all of the games that do take place during midweek, but also preview another round of Premier League action. That'll be early morning on Friday when that podcast is out, with all the fallout to the games, the interviews and bits and pieces as well, in a midweek round of the Premier League.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. Be gambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.